And now, live from the Rowe Auto Group Westbrook Auburn Studios, it's Ray Richardson on WLOB 100.5 FM.
Radar, put a mask on.
If that's my discharge, give it to me straight. I can take it.
I have a message. Lieutenant Colonel Henry Blake's plane was shot down over the Sea of Japan. It's Bunyan. There were no survivors.
It is 8:35. For those of you old enough, you remember that scene. Radar Riley walks into the operating room of the Mobile Army Surgical Hospital and announces their former commanding officer was shot down over the Sea of Japan. You brought that up earlier, Claude. Mark Riley just texted me and said the actors involved in that scene did not know this was happening. And, you know, again, Alan Alda, which many people don't know, he actually served in the Korean War.
And he did. Wait a minute. I thought it was.
Somebody told me this the other day, and I looked it up.
Who
and it
replaced
was there.
Trapper John? Guy with a mustache. Honeycutt,
yes.
He served. I think he was a Marine, if I'm not mistaken. But I didn't know Alan Alda served as well.
So let me just fact check myself here, but I'm almost positive I'm correct about that. He served in the Korean War, so this was really very appropriate or poignant for him. Mm. Because he saw that Alan Alda served in the Korean War as an Army Reserve artillery officer.
Mm. Wow.
So it was very real for him when that happened. And anyhow, but Mark Riley texted in and said none of the actors had any idea when he walked in there what he was going to do. They didn't know. It wasn't really scripted for them, just for Radar, because they wanted that visceral reaction. Mm. And if you ever saw that scene, it was incredible because, again, that's what happened.
And, again, that's stuck with you and I, Ray, for what, now 40-plus years?
Got to be more than that because that started, 72, and that was 75.
It ended in
that was the third season. Henry Blake left after 3 years.
Yeah.
One of my close friends just this week he's a cardiovascular surgeon, and he was telling me that he was inspired to go into medicine by MASH.
Wow.
And just an amazing show.
Yeah. Absolutely. We occasionally watch the reruns of it, and it's as though we had never seen it before. It's that fresh and that relevant.
Yeah,
it's incredible. And when you think about it, it fell on the heels of Hogan's Heroes. Hogan's Heroes was, I mean, MASH was funny. There's no doubt about it. But what the work they did was serious. Hogan's Heroes was basically to make fun of the Nazis.
But do you know why? So Colonel Klink, Werner Klemperer, who portrayed Colonel Klink, he had emigrated from Germany in the 30s. His father was a great orchestra conductor. And Klemperer said, look, in my contract, I wanted to say that Klink never wins at the end of every episode. And the incredible thing about Hogan's Heroes, when you think about it, is it's only 20 years after World War II. But you have people like John Banner, who played Sergeant Schultz, who was Jewish. You had Werner Klemperer, Colonel Klink, who was German. And you had Robert Clary, Corporal LeBeau, who had been in a concentration camp.
Absolutely.
In fact, when he went on Johnny Carson one night, Johnny said, hey, what's that tattoo on your arm? And he says, oh, that's from the concentration camp. He had lost half of his family.
Yes.
So what I think is really commendable for Clary and the rest of them is that they were able to make fun of the Nazis, but still perform in this sitcom. And just, I think that to overcome just 20 years before, and for us 20 years ago, think about where we were. That's not that long ago.
No.
And for these actors to be able to do that and present it to the American public, I think was extraordinary. Was Hogan's Heroes the greatest show ever? No. I mean, it's like Gilligan's Island.
But it was fun.
But there are interesting stories behind that. It's kind of like in Gilligan's Island. The professor served on a bomber in Europe during World War II.
Right. You know? Oh, yeah. There's a lot of backdrop stuff.
To bring it
Sorry, that's a really long.
But that's really good though, because that kind of perspective. I saw that interview with Johnny Carson and the guy Robert Clary played LeBeau.
Just died,
and it was overwhelming.
Yeah.
And on the theme that your guys are hitting on, did you see what happened with Stanley Kubrick's daughter and what the Full Metal Jacket? So, have you seen at the Trump rallies lately how he's shown?
Videos. And yes, I did
during
see
the
that.
Rallies.
Yes.
Have you seen that, Claude? No. One of the videos that he's been showing is. Interspliced like comparison of his military versus Kamala's possible military. He's going from like he's using Full Metal Jacket. He's using the berating that occurred in the movie, and then that's being juxtaposed with kind of like the whatever's going on in the military these days. The opposite of that, right? And then. People got up in arms in Hollywood that he was using this clip, and Vivian Kubrick came out and said that she knows Stanley would have absolutely loved Trump and would have supported it. Hmm. And it's interesting because taken at face value, the clips from Full Metal Jacket that are being played to the 20,000 people and on TV are very like militant and ruthless, and it kind of, but for those who know Full Metal Jacket, it's an anti-war movie,
right,
and which is beautiful for Trump and why he's choosing it. And Vivian was making that point. Vivian's obviously a brilliant woman like her dad. And she was just saying, obviously Trump understands with his, peace through strength this is a peace through strength clip. And it's not hyper aggressive as it's being portrayed.
Right. But I did see that. And I thought that was very interesting that she would come out and speak on behalf of her father. I thought that was great.
She was going beyond that. Just loves Trump. Yeah. And
You seen Meghan McCain recently? Because Harris continues to talk about John McCain, and Meghan actually said in a very public interview recently, "If you keep this up, I will come out and tell you what my father really thinks about Kamala Harris."
Yeah, she
and what he's actually said about her.
That was interesting.
Were they in the Senate at the same time? Yeah, I guess. I guess they were in the Senate at the same time.
Yeah, for a brief period.
Yeah.
I want to play this for you. This is Michaela Murphy. I got to know her when she first spoke down in Atlanta. As you know, Barack Obama came out and scolded black men, and black men around the country have had it. In fact, I've played many interviews now with black men who have said, wait a minute, Kamala Harris married a white man. Why can't we choose a white president if we want to? But Michaela Murphy, when she speaks, she takes no prisoners. She's fabulous. I want you guys to hear this.
Don't tell me I need to protect women's health care if your only form of women's health care is abortion. Now, the Biden-Harris administration also touts all this job growth, but they fail to mention the 10 million migrants they brought over here and the 9 million jobs they got. So if they're saying they added 15 million jobs and 9 million went to the migrants, then that sounds like 6 million jobs, y'all. Now, when we compare that to the 20 million jobs that were lost due to their COVID policies, that doesn't sound like a very progressive administration. That doesn't sound like a group of people who deserve a promotion. See, she had 3.5 years to do what she's been campaigning on for the last 2 months. For the last 3.5 years, the Democrats have not given a damn about black men unless they were dead or gay. If you're not cool with transitioning your child, you're a villain. If you embrace your natural masculinity, you're toxic. If you vote or think for yourself, you're a disgrace, according to Obama. This is what the Harris Waltz message is to black men. So bump that plan she just released yesterday, because last time I checked, she ain't been checking for y'all since she got in office. And by the way, Obama, there's white, Hispanic, Asian, Indian, all kinds of people not voting for Kamala Harris. So how dare you single out black men and act like it's their fault?
There it is right there. And that's what black men around the country have been saying. What's that?
Who is she?
Michaela Murphy. She's just an activist who spoke out, and they have embraced the heck out of her. But there it is. That last line is it. How dare you single out black men? That's what black men around the country are saying.
She's in Georgia, Claude, and Trump invited her on stage at one of his rallies, and she's just spitting fire, obviously.
Amazing. She handled
the substance beautifully. But what I would just add is that clip of Obama talking to younger black men was a fascinating clip because, one, that's not someone who's confident at all about this election. Right, that's someone with a lot of consternation, but more interestingly, what it kind of brought out is that the Trump era and Trump's manner of communicating and what we've now gotten used to has made Obama's shtick obsolete, and just the whole manner of dialogue that the super slow kind of dun dun.
Well, I think the other thing is, and I've heard it from women everywhere, they are tired of effeminate men telling women what it is they want in a man. They're tired of hearing it. They're tired of hearing about toxic masculinity. They're tired of this stuff. That's what Michaela Murphy was just talking about. They're tired of these ultra-progressive people trying to define what is normal anymore. Jeff Timberlake just walked in the door. He's a state senator out of Turner. He was a Senate Republican leader and just a hell of an all-around good guy. Jeff, good to see you.
Good morning.
You know, this door is always open for you if you're down this way.
Yeah. No, I was down, doing one of them dad things. My daughter said that she needed her car picked up down to Row Ford, so.
I'm glad you went to Row Ford. So, they sponsored the studio for 12 years. We appreciate that.
Yes.
Row is the place to go.
Evidently, my daughter thinks so.
I love that. Meet Claude Barraby. Claude is, do you know Claude?
We just met, but my mother actually represented Turner, I think, for one or two terms. The Democrats were trying to get her votes from Lewiston out, so they gave her just a portion of Lewiston and then a bunch of the towns in the early 90s. She represented Turner for just a little bit, but then went back to Lewiston when they redistricted her.
You may have known her, Georgette Barraby.
Oh, yes. I knew Georgette.
And this is Dove Sachs. He's an attorney here in Maine, founder of Independence Law Maine.
We've met before.
Jeff has Rickerhill Farm, which is 1803. He and David Jones go back and forth about who's the oldest and maybe the best. I don't have any idea.
I feel the oldest.
No. I feel the oldest, let me tell you. This election is taking years from my very short rest of my life.
It's only 19 days left.
I know. I can't wait.
Somebody that's running for their last time, I can hardly wait for it to be over.
Yeah, I bet. That's right. Your last election, right?
It's my last election.
Absolutely. So we're having an election night at the Regency as we did 8 years ago. You should come down. We're going to have food, cash bar, and celebration.
Is it going to last past 8 o'clock?
Well, it certainly lasted last time until 4:30 in the morning. That's when we left the Regency in 2016.
That's when I get up in the morning, not when I go to bed at night.
Yeah, well, I didn't go to bed last in 2016. I didn't go to bed. I stayed up. I watched it all, and then we came right here. Yeah, it was fabulous.
Jeff, I want to thank you, and I also owe you an apology. The thank you is just the most incredible orchard in Maine that you guys have, Rickerhill. I've already been twice with my kids this year, and one of the only orchards in Maine that has reliably amazing organic apples to pick. Great prices. And I just ate one this morning, I think. So thank you for that. Just the most picturesque spot you
could ever
imagine.
What's the apology?
The apology was when I was there on Saturday with my kids. We parked right close, as close as you can get to where you check out and everything. And because we're, we know the deal. And car was locked, doing all the picking, and we used to do the slingshots. My kids love that. And then my daughter goes to the car and sets off the alarm. And it's loud. I don't know if you were there and heard it, but it was too loud. But of course, alarm's gone off before. I know how to deal with it.
Were you ruining the quiet enjoyment of Jeff's property?
It was, it was like the last place you want your car alarm to go off. But I see it. I'm not far away. I run over, and all I have to do is unlock the door and start it, and then we're good. I'm wearing cargo pants. I cannot find my keys. And I've like eight pockets. I'm going
to. So now you've been ruined the quiet enjoyment of everybody at Rickerhill Farm.
Were you there? Did you hear it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's it was fine.
And it was a huge blessing. We had to find the keys after picking apples, and by the grace of God, we found them. It was incredible. And where we found them was because it was we got there early and there was no one there at the slingshots where you slingshot the apples. And I went where you're not supposed to go, another apology. And my daughter shot me with an apple. And I think that's when I jumped and the keys went out. So then I have to find the keys and I've retraced. And I think that's when the keys came out. But people are shooting their apples. So I'm like dodging. But we found the keys so that's the apology.
Yeah, I think my comment was to Ruth, the lady working in the pick-your-own stand, was somebody's having a bad day and wicked embarrassed.
My kids were so embarrassed, Jeff. My kids were so embarrassed because they were by the car and everyone was just like looking at them like, and what did you kids do? They ran into the porta potty and locked themselves in there. I'm like, thanks, guys. So it was all eyes on me for about 15 minutes of nightmare.
It really wasn't that long. It was only about six, but it probably seemed like an hour.
Well, because we found the keys. I don't know what we were going to do.
But anyway, no, it's good to be down here, Ray. It's always fun to go down and listen to what you guys are up to and what's going on. It's been an interesting year in the state of Maine, and I think we're headed into a good night 19 days from now.
I think you're right.
I'm feeling better than I was 2 months ago, let's put it that way.
I will say, for me, it's been a hard day's night. There's just no. I think the Beatles said it right. It's been a hard day's night. This has been, you know, I want Trump to win. I want him to win in a landslide. But he started campaigning 4 years ago. This has been a very long election season.
So much at stake.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, you know, and when I watch stuff like I watched last night with Bret Baier, I just think to myself, you know, the whole point of the two-party systems is to argue important issues, and all she wanted to do was tell you Donald Trump is Satan. That's all she cared about. She had nothing else to say. Every time any question was asked, she blamed Donald Trump. Clearly, anybody with a functioning brain in this country who gives a damn about anything can go look at Border Patrol statistics and see that not 1 year of Donald Trump, if you add all four of those years up, that doesn't equal 1 year of illegal boarding crossings under Biden and Harris. Why did those things happen? Because they undid his policies. And then she's right. They did put in within hours an idea on immigration. But the idea was to give a path to earned citizenship for illegals. It had nothing to do with securing the border, nothing whatsoever. And even this bipartisan border bill, which some of the provisions, by the way, didn't take place until 2029. I mean, just such a fake, phony, fraud person she is. And she is that. This did not stop people from coming across the border illegally. It allowed, depending on the matrix you use, because there were two parameters within that bill, a 5,000 person threshold and an 8,500 person threshold, it allowed between 1.8 million and 3 million people more to come across. What the bipartisan border deal did was give us more resources to process people when they come across illegally, but it didn't stop any of it. And as the Border Patrol said recently, the Afghani national who came in to disrupt the election on November 5th that they caught, the Border Patrol said they vetted this person. So having more resources to vet people while you're allowing 1.8 million to 3 million more people a year to come in doesn't mean anything, doesn't mean squat.
Ray, don't confuse the issue with facts and numbers, please.
I know. Well, you got to care about them. I mean, most people just read the headlines, yeah. But I care about them.
But as somebody who's served in the legislature for the last 14 years, and that's probably too long by most.
It is, by the way, it is too long.
Yeah.
How you've remained sane, you know, I don't know.
Well, whoever said I was sane? you know, but the one thing about the border bill that they keep talking about, they forget to talk about that was an omnibus bill. That wasn't just a border bill.
Yeah.
There was a lot of pork in that bill. And
it was going to send $60 billion to Ukraine and $14 billion to Israel.
It was just a huge spending bill. And, you know, maybe it would have been good to pass it for the border, but some of the other stuff that was in that bill was absolutely horrible. And but that's why you couldn't support it. It's not.
Well, Jeff, hang on.
Nobody ever talks about that.
I want to go back to what you said, though. It would have been good to pass it for the border if you didn't care about stopping people from coming in.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know if you, well, of course, you're Navy, so you know what a boat is.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have a boat or not, but if you get a boat with a hole in it, it starts taking on water. I don't care how fast you bail. You cannot out-bail the water coming in. the first thing you have to do is to plug the hole, and then you can attempt to bail the boat out of its water so that it doesn't sink. If you don't plug the hole, no human can out-bail the water coming in. That's what we have here. We have a border with a hole in it, and human beings are coming across. And no matter how many resources we put in place to try to bail here, which would be processing these people, it will never stop the leak.
But here's the smoking gun point to their argument about the bill. It's that Trump didn't require a bill to shut down the border when he took office. All he did was issue executive orders and remain in Mexico. And those were the policies that it took. Biden and Harris had that authority the first 3 years, and they went the other way. They reversed those policies and opened the border. So that's the smoking gun. They didn't need any bill.
The proof of what you just said is the following. After they did all this song and dance politically to try to confuse the American people, and after the quote-unquote bipartisan border bill, which, by the way, had bipartisan opposition, what did Joe Biden do? He signed some executive orders to try to slow down the people coming across the border, and it did slow it down. He had the authority all along. He just wanted to do what he has done along with her, which is to let these people in and find a way to give them citizenship, because they believe they will vote Democrat if they do that. But I don't believe that, actually. I think it's going back for fire on them. Most of the people coming across the border, you know, the ones that are coming here for the right reasons, they're fleeing oppression. They want freedom. They're people of faith. They're people who believe in hard work, and they aren't going to acquiesce to this Democratic plantation mentality.
Yeah. I mean, I've had the great honor of having a brother-in-law that served 25 years Special Forces. And then not only that, but he was one of the top ICE agents out of D.C. and worked Border Patrol for 15 years down in Brownsville, Texas. And
tough dude.
Yeah, he is. I should bring him in sometime, Ray, and have a conversation, because he's very interesting when he talks, because his job was being the head of the deportation even back in the Obama years. And he can tell you how this really works and how it really happens. And when you listen to him talk, you go, wow, this really is a nightmare. And when he talks about what the Biden administration has done over the last 3.5 years, or last almost 4 years now, but it's just a disaster to people that really know what's happening.
Mm.
And
We've had Border Patrol. I'd love to have men. We've had Border Patrol agents on.
Because you would find him a very interesting person, because he's not a Border Patrol, but he was he sat in D.C. as an ICE. He got out of there because he just couldn't take D.C. anymore.
What are his biggest points that are not necessarily what we hear?
It's the vetting that doesn't get done that they say that does get done, you know. And he talks about how these people come in and there's no way can you process them. Even if you said you was going to process everybody that crossed the border, there's no way can it happen when this many people are crossing the border at a time. So, you know, it's something to talk about, and I'll get him to come in sometime, Ray, because
yeah, no, I'd love that.
Interesting conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, we got a break. We'll be right back. It's 8:57.
Hi, folks. My name is Scott Ducharme, and I'm running for Maine State Senate District 34 for Kennebunkport, Wells, Berwick, and North Berwick. I believe Mainers need economic relief now, and I'm ready to deliver. As a chief engineer in the United States,